Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Education is an important issue here in New Mexico, like many states. Everyone wants students to get the best possible education in our state, but how do we do that? And how much should we pay for it if that's constantly debated? This hour, we're looking at education funding in the current state budget, and then we'll focus on what research shows are some of the most promising investments, those things that pay off in higher test scores and better outcomes for students. This show is part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project that looks at ethics, transparency, and good government. It's funded by the Thornburg Foundation and by contributions from KUNM listeners. So here's what I want to start with. What do you think our public schools need right now? Where would you like to see state funding dedicated in classrooms in your community? Join us today by calling 877-899-5866. I'm joined in studio this morning by Dr. Mariah Heredia Griego, Director of the UNM Center for Education Policy Research. Welcome.
Good morning.
Also, Ian Esquivel, Executive Director of the Learning Alliance New Mexico. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to come to you guys in just a minute. I also have Senator William Soles on the phone from Santa Fe. He introduced legislation this session that would direct additional funding to schools at a level recommended in a 2008 independent study. Good morning, Senator Soles.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you.
What do you think are some of the most important financial needs for school districts right now?
I'm not sure that there's any one important thing. We have been cutting education so much that there's needs all across the board. Certainly, we know that funding early childhood education has one of the largest return on investments for our state, and certainly that would make a difference. But we also are underpaying our teachers. We can't keep good teachers in the classroom. We can't attract teachers. Teachers aren't going into the education field. And so if we don't have good teachers, you know, education is very difficult to provide for our students.
And so would your legislation be part of addressing that?
It would address the funding shortfalls all across the board. New Mexico also has very high levels of poverty, students of second language. All of those require additional funding in order to bring those students up to levels where they can compete in today's society.
You're also a retired educator. How does that change how you speak with your fellow lawmakers about this issue of school funding?
I think it gives me a very strong voice in the Senate, in that people know when I speak about education, it's not something I've read, it's something that I've lived. And I've been in education from everything from the training of teachers at New Mexico State University to being a middle school principal, an elementary principal, and also a classroom teacher. And so I come with a very strong voice of practical knowledge in the classroom, as well as more the lawmaker side of things.
What about your constituents? Are you hearing from community members about their concerns about funding for schools?
It's probably the thing I get the most calls and emails about on a daily basis. Just the other day, a friend of mine who's teaching at the high school that I was at when I retired a year and a half ago called me almost pleading, "You have to do something, or we're going to be losing 9 to 10 teachers, and we're losing some of our very good teachers because there just isn't money in the budgets to continue to fund education."
I think a lot of folks can imagine that, you know, losing teachers and what that would look like. But what about other potential financial hits to the district and services? Would that also impact after-school programs, different initiatives to try to help students maybe catch up if they're falling behind?
Cuts in education absolutely hurt the classroom. There is no money that's in education that is waste that doesn't in some manner work towards kids in classrooms. And that includes administration, it includes buses, it includes the buildings, it includes custodians and cafeteria workers. Every single one of those people is critical to the life of that child and them doing well in school.
But we have been hearing in recent years, and particularly in the past couple of months, that the state just doesn't have any money. The money's not there. It's another tough budget year. How are you? Do you think that there's a way that for the lawmakers to agree on either keeping funding where it's at or even raising funding for schools?
The things I've heard, and the House was in budget meetings till late last night, and I have not seen exactly what came out of the House yet. We'll get some of that report today. The plans are we're trying to keep the budget at the start of 2017, and I've heard some things that they may have passed a budget. I believe it went down on straight party lines, but the House passed a budget that has a slight increase in education funding. The budget has a long way to go. It still has to get through the Senate, and then it obviously the governor also would have to sign off on it. We have a governor who has said she will never raise taxes, and there is no money to cut and to fill any of the back holes without raising some sort of revenues. And so I think there's a showdown coming.
Absolutely. Senator Soles, I want to leave with this. Are lawmakers working with everyday New Mexicans to talk about these issues? Is there a way that you see where we could get more feedback from the community into those conversations in Santa Fe?
I think many times lawmakers do pay attention to what their constituents are saying, and there are a number of ways, and certainly phone calls directly into their offices indicating that you want to make sure that funding is protected for education and actually increased. Want to make sure that people are paying attention to the various bills trying to increase the funding for education. Emails make a difference. Direct calls, as I indicated, direct letters, handwritten letters, probably have the most effect, but they're the most difficult for people to do. But also, we need to start talking to the governor. The governor is the one that ultimately is going to either approve the budget that funds education or doesn't approve it. And we need to make sure that she's accountable, as we are as well.
Senator Soles, I know you're busy. Thanks for making the time to speak with us this morning.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, I appreciate anyone out there, you know, make sure that we have to make sure that education is an investment in the future for New Mexico. If we don't have education, our state has no future.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation with some specifics about investments in education with our folks that are with us today. And we want you to join the conversation. Where do you think the state should invest those precious dollars in education right now? What do you think about Senator Soles' take on education funding? Join us by calling 877-899-5866. I want to shift now to the experience of New Mexicans outside of the Roundhouse. Ian, your organization, the Learning Alliance New Mexico, has been focusing on the student experience. What are you hearing from students about what they want and need to be successful in school?
So we have the good fortune of working with a variety of different students from across the state. And one of the common themes we've heard time and again from students that they really appreciate and value is just solid relationships with the adults in school. So whether that's teachers or coaches or a social worker, we've heard time and again just how valuable that is to them, for an adult to see them, to recognize them, to listen to them. And that's something that will encourage them to maybe show up to school if they didn't want to show up otherwise. Or it could encourage them also to perform very well in a class, maybe a class that they don't necessarily care about per se, but they like the teacher. So they'll show up and they'll work hard for that.
Senator Soles mentioned that cuts to education are being seen in the classroom. Do you hear from students or families that they're feeling that, or they're noticing a difference?
We have heard from some students who say we don't have the same sort of materials that we've had in the past, or we have to share textbooks, or we want access to some computers or technologies that some of our other friends might have and we don't. So we hear it on that end. But I also think our students are pretty resourceful and they find ways to make it work.
Yeah. Mariah, what are some of the trends that you're seeing right now, things that are showing some promise for helping New Mexico students succeed?
Sure. There are definitely things that we're finding in the research, and it's not things that we haven't talked about. We've talked about the need for smaller class sizes, for more individualized attention for a diverse set of students. We're seeing practices that are effective for English language learners. Extended school days are all conversations in line with that is the K-3 Plus program, which is highly talked about and discussed in our state. Trying to prevent some of the summer slide, what we call summer slide, where students lose learning when they're out of school over the summer days. We're also really looking at the collective impact efforts that are happening across the state, namely Mission Graduate. We have a partnership with United Way Central New Mexico. It's a Cradle to Career initiative. There's a similar one in southern New Mexico, as well as in the northern part of the state, where it's a cross-sector partnership. So we're thinking beyond education and pulling stakeholders from across our community, from business community, higher education, both 2 years and 4 years, and thinking more holistically about how we all align our work in the efforts of changing outcomes in our community.
Let's talk a little more about graduation rates. Governor Martinez mentioned that in her State of the State address, touted that graduation rates are up in New Mexico. What's part of that? What's Mission Graduate? What's been going on behind the scenes that's been raising those graduation rates?
Sure. I think that there's a number of, we can't point to just one component. It is a broad, holistic effort from many partners and key partners. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot of conversations right now about thinking about differently about chronic absenteeism and really stressing the importance of being in school. And so we've seen some partnerships with local school districts around bringing attention to the value of kids being in school. When we know they're in school, we know we can actually tap into some resources and support families and also identify when families are in chronic need. We're also, you know, thinking really broadly about, you know, school-based health centers and community schools are a part of that conversation. Thinking about how we blur the rigid line between educational institutions and our communities, and thinking how they about how they can be more like community centers where families can go to also find resources for their children and beyond the classroom. So there's a number of different diverse efforts going on, all of them very similar aligned with the same aims. I think where we're really challenged is implementing those things to a level of fidelity that actually has impact.
What do you mean by that?
Sure. So that was a really kind of wonky researcher term. But so when we say, for example, K-3+, we were a part of a randomized control trial here in the state in partnership with Utah State University. And what we found was that, sure, we can have an extended summer learning, but what was most impactful, where we saw the best outcomes, was where that teacher was consistent from the school year into the next school year. So it's not that a child learns and has gains additionally in the additional days during the summer, but that learning is retained and then also picked up. The student gets to start from that point instead of starting over at the next grade level that is the base level when they may be beyond that.
Oh, interesting.
Sure.
For folks listening today, are you a parent? Where would you like to see more investment in education for your child? What programs or activities are the most important to you right now? Would you like to see your kids going to school through the summer, extending the learning throughout the year? Give us a call, 877-899-5866. You can also comment on Twitter. We are at KUNM News. Or send an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Ian, what do you think about that? Students, we feel like students don't want to be in school, but are there programs that would really engage them either for a longer school day or through the summer?
So again, a couple of things we've heard from students is they're happy to show up to school when they feel like what they're learning is relevant. So we've heard that time and again in terms of they want to see relevancy in their curriculum. And sometimes it's hard for students to make that connection between if I want to grow up and own a small business and maybe, you know, take over my dad's car shop or whatever, why am I learning calculus? And there might be a way that there is a connection there, but I think unless teachers make that connection for them, they might not see that relevancy right away. We also hear from students who are excited about extracurricular activities or things that maybe beyond just the regular curriculum that make them want to show up for school. So to your point of, you know, can we extend the school day or add something during the summer? I do think we're hearing that from students, but there has to be some value added to them where they're saying, I see how this is going to help me not only now, but for what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Do you make that pitch to lawmakers to spend money on things like that?
I have not.
What is kind of your, if you were to make a pitch to say, this is a good investment for the state, what would be your argument for that?
Well, I think Mariah did a really nice job in terms of there are lots of different things that would be good investments. And I think that's something else to call out. I think there are so many existing positive things happening in our state. It's just a matter of local communities deciding which one are we seeing has the biggest impact for us. And that's what I think is part of the beauty of our system is local people can advocate to their representatives to say, hey, in our community, we're seeing this great thing happen. How are we making sure that we're having more funding coming to this thing? Because we're seeing it be very effective in our space.
And Mariah, from a researcher perspective, it seems like it could be challenging to something that works in one place may not work in another place. How do you make sense of data?
Sure. So I think when we talk about data, there's a number of different components. One of the things, I'm very much a qualitative researcher, and so the story and the narrative, much like what my colleague Ian is, the work that he's doing in the community, that those stories are data, and they're information that can inform the work that we're doing in the schools. So, you know, for example, a component of our data research team in partnership with Mission Graduate Recently did a graduate profile in partnership with the Albuquerque Public Schools. And what they were finding was very similar to what Ian is hearing, but synthesizing it in a researcher, a rigorous process, helps to make sense of it and make it very useful. So part of what we were finding was there was over 300 surveys conducted, 45 focus groups across the district, and we were talking to principals and teachers, post-secondary faculty, cross-sector partners, young people, and parents. And we heard that reading, writing, and math are important. However, the larger bulk of what they were talking about is that the foundational needs need to be there. So stability, safety, security, freedom from fear, those are all the places where a student begins to be able to have the space to learn when their basic needs are met around food, health, water, and shelter, right? We see some of those basic needs not quite being met, right, in our community. And thinking about how do schools have a role in that? The other component is that we were seeing social emotional skills as the biggest bulk of what students need to be, you know, successful in college, career, and life. So things around integrity and self-awareness, work ethic, we heard those things over and over again. Also respect for others. So thinking about knowing about history and cultural resources, thinking more broadly and having civic mindedness was another important component. And then just as Ian mentioned, you know, being resourceful is one of the best keys for our students to have success in life. So resiliency, persistence, that also incorporates the problem solving, critical thinking skills that we really need folks to be thinking about when they get into the community and into the workplace and college and beyond.
Excellent. We'll come back to a little bit more of that in just a few minutes. We're going to go to a break now. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Our focus today is funding for public education in New Mexico. Do you think funding for public schools is being used wisely? Do you think the state is currently spending enough money on public schools? Would you pay higher taxes if it went to education and if it went to programs that could demonstrate they're working? Why or why not? The number to join us is 877-899-5866. We're also live tweeting the show. Send us your comments at KUNM News.
Support comes from the UNM School of Architecture and Planning, announcing the winner of the Jeff Harner Award February 24th at 5:30 in the Architecture School Auditorium, with lecture by architect Benjamin Gill-Martin. Info at jeffharnerAward.com.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
The group Tembembe Ensemble Continuo thrives in the territory where classical and folk overlap. Their music is a rich blend of Spanish classical and Mexican folk. Music and conversation with Tembembe Ensemble Continuo on the next Performance Today from 8 p.m.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. Thanks for joining us today. Again, you can join our conversation and share your comments on what worked for you when you were in school or what you've seen work for young people in your life, maybe a child or grandchild. What do you think helped them be successful, helped them graduate or helped them do well in school, maybe even turn things around if they were having a hard time? The number is 877-899-5866. Again, that's 877-899-5866. 5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org. Mariah, I have a question for you. It came in through Twitter from Christina. She wants to know how teacher-student ratios affect learning. Are there any statistics that can speak to that?
So, yeah, there's been definitely a number of studies done across the country, and we know that we have a broad, diverse students don't come into schools all at the same, living in the same box and with the same abilities, right? We have a diversity of abilities, and when the larger the classroom, the more challenging it is for a teacher to be able to cater learning appropriately to all of the needs of students. The larger the classroom, the more challenging that is. And so the research definitely supports that there's a kind of a tipping point, right, of what one individual even if they have an educational assistant in the classroom with them, is capable of actually addressing the needs on a daily basis. And that can be very challenging for teachers in large classroom settings. So the more focused attention, the better for any student, any child.
You know what I've always wondered is why aren't there more assistance with teachers, especially when a classroom has been identified as a lot of students having a little more needs for help with reading or something like that? Is that, you think that's just a money issue, or is that kind of a structural issue in education?
That's a good question. I've heard both things, right? So we think when we think about educational assistance, those official titles, folks with those official titles, the salaries for those positions are very low. It's not something that somebody could actually raise a family on long term and retire as an educational assistant. It's usually a stepping stone to the classroom as a teacher of some sort or some other role in education. However, there are tons of nonprofits and philanthropy organizations that are very much interested in being able to support students in a consistent and ongoing way. I think the biggest challenge there is a systematic one. It can be difficult to partner with school districts when you're talking about bringing in folks from outside in the community. We have to have rigorous background checks and making sure that children are safe and that that they are rubbing shoulders with positive and constructive adults that are going to help support them. And so that's a lengthy process to be able to help make sure that those folks have adequate skills to be working with children. And additionally, I think there are some structural challenges with the length of the school day and the amount of time that students need on task and pulling away from those things. And as well as testing time, things like that can make it really challenging for folks to be able to engage and support in additional wraparound services during the classroom and during the school day.
Yeah. Does that ring true to you? You're listening right now, hearing what Mariah had to say about folks who are maybe volunteering in schools, or maybe you wanted to volunteer and you found that it was really challenging to get in during the school day or to find a useful way to get involved to help support students. Do you have an idea that you think would help work to support students in New Mexico? The number to call, 877-899-5866. I'd like to also bring in now Matt Grubbs. He's with us in studio, a staff writer at the Santa Fe Reporter. Thanks for being here, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
You recently wrote this great feature story on data collection on students and schools in New Mexico. What did you find?
It's a page turner, right? Data collection in schools in New Mexico. We found that, well, first of all, as you've heard, I mean, there's so much in terms of blood, sweat, and tears that's being poured into figuring out how to better educate our students, how to get more results. And kind of across the board, people are interested in data. We've sort of moved past the debate about whether or not collecting data is useful. Now the question is, how do we collect it? How is it used, and how quickly does it get back to the groups like CEPR and like the parent groups, where we can actually measure some of this stuff? So, for example, in New Mexico, there are more than 140 data sets that are required for school districts to report every year, and days of school is what, 180, somewhere in that range? And so it's an enormous amount of data. And a lot of schools question whether or not that data is used effectively. We dug into a report that I should mention was also funded by the Thornburg Foundation with the blessing of the Legislative Education Study Committee, which is this group that meets throughout the year, as well as the Public Education Department, the PED. It was an Austin-based educational consultant, and she looked at New Mexico's data collection, data reporting system, and she found that the state really spends a lot of money, an average of $212 per student per year on data reporting. So for the average New Mexico school district, that's about $357,000 a year spent on delivering data reports to the state.
Did you find any ways that the districts could save money on that?
The recommendations, at least from this consultant, were to eliminate 9 sets of data reporting. We talked to Hannah Scandera, the public education secretary, as well as some legislative leaders, including Senator Soles and also Representative Dennis Rausch. Dennis Rausch is an interesting guy because he, like Senator Soles, is an educator. He's the superintendent out at Logan Schools, which is a stone's throw from Texas. And he said that one of the issues that he has is oftentimes when they're reporting data, he will call up PED and report this data. And then he'll say to them, you know, we gave you guys this stuff a month ago, or we gave you guys this stuff last week. And they say, oh, well, we don't really talk to that bureau where you reported it. We need it, plus we need you to add these two columns of data or something like that. And to him, that just feels so redundant. He supports a lot of the governor's educational reforms, but he said on the ground, this report that this educational consultant really captures the difficulty that especially districts like his have to deal with.
What could the state be missing by not looking at that data that it's collecting?
The ones that, well, I guess the 140 data sets, you know, if they're not reviewing them carefully, they're missing an opportunity to apply that data to our educational system. And then there's a trick to that, certainly. This consultant said that there are 9 reports that she identified, 6 of which can be done, eliminated legislatively through a law passing, and 3 of which can be eliminated by the administration. If Secretary Scandera wanted to get rid of some of those, she could. Representative Rosch has proposed legislation just last week that would get rid of an annual parent survey, an elementary phys ed report, and for some districts that get Even Start family literacy funding, one of their progress reports. And it's not that that data isn't needed. It's that more than likely it's replicated somewhere else.
All right. We're going to get to more data in just a moment. We have a bunch of phone calls coming in. Let's take some of those right now. Dawn in Albuquerque, what do you want to add to the conversation?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I grew up in music, singing and playing instruments, band, orchestra, and as I moved around, I just found that was really a place for me, and to have a place for students outside of just the traditional reading, writing, and arithmetic, I think is really critical in keeping people participating in schools, not just on a young age, but through high school and even college. And it's just so sad to see the arts disappearing. It kept me out of trouble. It kept me focused. It was just something that I can't imagine not having if I looked back. And another thing that I've been hearing more recently is mindfulness being taught in schools and how that's improved participation in the classroom, behavior, attendance, test scores, all the good stuff. And I'm just wondering, is there anything on the horizon for New Mexico in plans of keeping the arts or including other non-traditional methods of education?
Dawn, thanks for calling in that question. Ian Esquivel from Learning Alliance, do you know if there's any plans for keeping the arts in schools?
I don't know, but I can say that I've heard from a lot of students and parents who are similar to Dawn to say just how valuable that was to them. And again, often saying, one of the reasons, main reasons I come to school is because of my art class, because of my guitar class, because of something that they look forward to, and they enjoy the curriculum, but I really think it's that art or that extracurricular piece that brings them to the table. So I think there's a political will or there's a community will to keep that in the schools.
Yeah. I also hear, you know, sports, theater, mm-hmm. other extracurriculars, sometimes from young people. We have some folks who want to make some comments on funding. Let's go now to Sarah in Albuquerque. Sarah, welcome to the Call-In Show. What's your comment?
Oh, yes. I believe that this budget shortfall is a lie because Albuquerque, they have decided to build that sports arena on the west side. And it usually costs around like $100 million. You know, it doesn't just cost $100,000. So they have money for that. And also like 30 top city workers got like a $30,000 per person raise. So Rob Perry, CAO right now, he's making $180,000. He used to make $120,000, and then 30, 40 other people all got these raises. So that comes out to be like $1 million altogether. So they have money for these things, but when it comes to libraries and our education and paying our teachers, they're always broke. So this is a deceit to pull off on us so they could misappropriate money. You know, that's what I think.
All right, Sarah, thanks for calling in today. Let's go now to David in Albuquerque. David, your comment on funding for schools.
Yes, hello. I'd like to follow up on her. You know, I think the previous caller made some very good points. I would like to ask the people on the show, you know, with all this data collection, is data collection being done on central office? You know, my kids go to Albuquerque Public Schools, and all these things sound great, but they sound very pie in the sky because from what I'm hearing in reality, all these programs are in danger of being cut. So maybe the data collection really needs to be for a central office. Thank
central
you.
Office meaning administration?
Yes.
All right. Thanks for your call today. We also have an email comment from Chris. She says her daughter trained as a teacher in New Mexico, then got multiple job offers at 40% more to a salary in Seattle. So she left the state. She thinks the teacher rating system in New Mexico is driving good teachers out of the state. Also a comment by email from Barbara. She wants to see an increase in taxes on gas to fund education. How can she help make something like that happen is her question. That's something to contact your lawmakers about. What ideas do you have for funding for education in schools? Do you think there's some creative ways that schools could look at funding right now? Give us a call and join the conversation, 877-899-5866. Do you think public schools are a good investment for New Mexico right now? Call in and tell us why you think they are or are not a good investment. And where would you put precious dollars and resources to schools right now? What do you think would work to improve education in New Mexico? Again, 877-899-5866. Let's get back to some more data. Matt Grubbs just shared what he found looking at how schools are collecting data. Mariah, what does that mean for the research you do on kind of the big picture for what's working and what's not in education?
We are very pro collecting data. It is very much in our interest. I think the challenges that we've experienced on the research side is the way data are defined, indicators are defined, and variables are defined, the way and the consistency with which they're collected across districts and by school. So sometimes you'll see we recently did some work around chronic absenteeism and trying to understand chronic absenteeism in our state. And the challenge there really was that folks were meeting compliance by tracking truancy, which has a different definition, and it's just includes unexcused absences. But chronic absenteeism is really telling us a bigger story about our students in school, and if they're excused or unexcused or out of school suspension, they are not in an educational learning space where we understand and know where they are. That prevents us from being able to intervene early on in their education, wrap families with the supports that they might need to help support the education of their children. And so we were finding that data were collected in very different ways for attendance across schools and across school districts. And so the other challenge we have consistently is being able to then understand what's happening to those children. Are they ending up in foster care, in abuse and neglect situations? Are they ending up in the juvenile justice system? These are all things. It's not an easy crosswalk and connector. We also want to know, are they ending up, how are they doing in the workforce later on in life? What types of jobs are they filling? What are their wages looking like? And can we connect that and understand where education can play a role in the long-term life outcomes of children and young adults? I think one of the things that we know, and it's sometimes in our gut, which is not always the best research approach, but it does help us to steer the boat in a direction, right, to start asking questions, is we know that we have we've had low graduation rates from high school and low post-secondary degree attainments in our state. Those folks are parents, right? And so when we're talking about early childhood education, early interventions, what's happening in K through 12, that has to also be a part of the conversation, right? We have to be thinking about how do we support young parents who maybe didn't necessarily choose or weren't equipped with the tools to be an engaged parent. How do we now help them to support their children through this educational process system? And I think that's a multi-generational effort that folks are thinking about, and we really want to be more thorough and understand what the impact of some of those efforts is and can be.
Ian, anything you want to add on data collection and what that kind of means for mm-hmm. kids in schools today?
Yeah, so I appreciate many of the points Mariah made. And one of the things I was thinking about as well in terms of, so are we collecting the data just to be compliant, or how are we collecting the data to inform our practice and our services? And I think those can be very different things. I'm always curious about how is the data useful for students, families, and educators, rather than, again, just kind of checking the box of a compliance issue for the administrative office. So I think that there are opportunities to use that data in a really useful way for students, families, and educators. But I'm wondering how many of those connections we've made.
Yeah, because we see a lot of numbers about, like, these are all the ways that students and schools are struggling in New Mexico, and how do we take those numbers and put them into, well, what works and what's going to address that and what's going to be effective? Mm-hmm. It's challenging.
Yes.
Mariah, you wanted to say something else?
Yes, I just wanted to add that there are efforts around early warning indicators. So it's not like we don't know what we would be looking for. Mm-hmm. And it's not as if the data aren't being collected. I think Ian is exactly right. It's about how we use it, we make it accessible, and people understand how to apply interventions to address what they're seeing in the data in a consistent way. And so we have early warning indicator systems that are being implemented across the state on a small scale. It's not to the scale that we need, and those take funding. It's a lot of effort.
What would that look like,
as well as training?
That early warning and intervention.
Sure. So I mean, so there's markers throughout the school year, right? And so if a student is not accelerating, say a quarter of the way through the academic year, a teacher should be able to get some of that feedback from the testing or their portfolios in a systematic way to be able to intervene with a student and target some additional supports for a student to help make the grade by the end of the school year, and to be at grade level by the time they're done. Typically what we're hearing from teachers and school districts is that the data aren't getting back to the classroom until it's too late, and there's not enough time to have appropriate interventions in the classroom to help them skill up
for that year. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're going to go to break really quickly. You don't have to have a child in school to be part of the conversation today. Are you a community member who's concerned about public schools? Where would you like to see districts in the state investing more dollars? Tutoring, after-school programs, food programs, other interventions like what Mariah just mentioned? Give us a call, 877-899-5866.
Support comes from UNM Bookstore. Find course materials, exclusive Lobo apparel and Spirit merchandise, office supplies, and convenience items. Located on campus at Central and Cornell, info@bookstore.unm.edu.
You pledged to get involved this year, and here's your chance. Sign up to answer calls during KUNM's spring fundraiser, April 1st through the 7th. Choose a weekend shift or anytime on weekdays from early morning to evening. Meet like-minded people, your favorite hosts, and get free CDs. We'll provide breakfast, lunch from House of Bread, snacks, and dinner from Saggio's. Openings are listed at KUNM.org. Look for Help Answer Phones or call me, Stephen, at 277-4516.
The Centers for Disease Control say more than a quarter of Americans occasionally don't get enough sleep. Lack of sleep can lead to more serious health problems. Are there things that we're doing that are leading to severe sleep disorders? Find out on the next Native America Calling as we talk to the experts about treating sleep disorders.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Thanks for joining us this morning for the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus, joined in studio this morning by Dr. Mariah Heredia Griego, Director of the UNM Center for Education Policy Research, Ian Escobel, Executive Director of the Learning Alliance New Mexico, and Matt Grubbs, a staff writer at the Santa Fe Reporter. Lots of calls coming in right now. Let's go now to the phone lines. We have Annalise in Taos. What's your comment?
Hi, I teach at Roots and Wings Community School. It's an expeditionary learning-inspired school up in Lama, New Mexico, and I'm really calling because educational assistants are the backbone of school systems, and I served as an EA for 3 years. They are not able to make a living wage. That's an excellent point, but they're just critical in the classroom. Right now, we got the Raise to Lead grant. We have Title I funding, so I actually have sometimes 1 to 2 assistants with me, and our ratios are 1 to 6 students. According to our regional reading coach, our class made some of the most significant growth she saw. The reality is, to have really highly effective, differentiated instruction, you need small groups, especially when you're working with an at-risk population. Our population is 86% qualified for free and reduced lunch, 25% have IEPs. And so you're looking, when you're 49th in education as a state, I really think we need to start researching what are the different dynamics and learning environments that serve children. And right now we're looking at budget shortfalls. The Reese Lee grant, we're not sure if it will exist anymore. And I was informed through the board that I will not have an educational assistant next year. So I'm outsourcing grants. But this is a huge problem, and I would just really encourage policymakers to start looking at what small group settings do for student achievement, because I've seen it work really, really well in my classroom.
Annalise, thanks so much. We really appreciate hearing that perspective from the classroom today. Let's go now to Ray in Western New Mexico. Ray, what do you want to add? Ray, are you there? Let's try to come back to Ray in just a minute. Let's go now to Ellen in Albuquerque. Ellen, what do you want to add to our conversation?
Hi. I am just curious as to what about the IEP? Have they still gone, or as far as the as far as the parents getting involved in the with the children, has that gone away, or has it diminished, or what's up with that? And then on top of that, I know a lot of people who, you know, are disabled, and it seems to me, or legally blind, and it also seems to me that instruction for blind students has gone by the wayside, too, as far as instruction, like in Braille or whatever they need.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering how, you know, what's going to become of that in the future, you know?
Yeah, IEPs are required for some students. Ian, can you explain to folks who may not know what an IEP is?
So it's an individual education plan, and I think it speaks to this idea of, again, how we're personalizing different education to help students who may come to class with different abilities to make sure that they're having their needs met. And it's a plan that's constructed so that there's a lot of buy-in with that and some thought around it. Again, so I think that speaks to the personalization piece, which is so important. And I've also heard some interesting ideas about what if every student in our system had an IEP, right? That really speaks to meeting students where they are, regardless of their abilities.
Because right now, who gets an IEP?
I think it's students with disabilities.
Special education students, but that could also be students in gifted programs, as well as special education.
Yeah. All right, let's go now to Paula in Albuquerque. Paula, what do you think our schools need right now?
Hi, I'm a 32-year educator in public schools, and I'm actually just arriving at my school right now. I really believe that we need to find a way to not only get the arts back in schools, but we have got to get physical education and recess back into elementary schools at a greater amount. We need to offer that kind of movement and free exploration time in middle school as well as in high school.
Now, Paula, I have a question
children,
for you. So,
especially young children, they need the upside down, sideways, fast, slow, free exploration and sensory integration of their bodies in order to increase their learning while they're in the classrooms. And a lot of schools, in an effort to meet their academic needs of the state and their testing and their data collection needs of the state, have reduced amounts of recess and PE so that you have 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds who get maybe 15 to 20 minutes of free active play a day. And that just isn't good.
And what changes do you see in students when they don't have the opportunity for that free and active play?
A lot of negative behaviors because their bodies are antsy. I mean, think of it as an adult. If you don't get to get up and move around, you get antsy. You get a headache, your back starts to hurt, your legs start to tingle, your neck starts to ache. All the same stuff happens to young humans. They're just smaller bodies than you, but they're also humans, and they have got to move and learn. Our brains, our bodies have got to experience all the planes. It's kind of like 3D learning. We have to let students get upside down, sideways, move fast, move slow, crawl on the floor. Do that when you see kids out at a park and you see how they're playing and they go in all different directions, all different times. That is actually encouraging growth and learning abilities in the brain. And that it then comes back into the classroom and allows them to learn in a whole different variety of ways and allows them to calm and balance. A caller earlier talked about mindfulness. I incorporate mindfulness in my physical education classes, and it's amazing the results that teachers see in their classrooms. But the fact is that most schools, especially in poverty-stricken states and states that are really strapped for cash, have reduced their recess minutes very, very small to small amounts, and have a lot of schools have, if they haven't taken away physical education, they've reduced it maybe one 20-minute PE a week.
Oh, wow.
So in that sense, they're also not getting the motor skill instruction, the cooperative, the experiential play instruction, the team lead-up skill instruction that they should be getting. So then we're sending them off to middle school, and they still haven't had that time for their bodies to do that work. And we see behavior issues. We see learning disabilities. We see students labeled as behavior problems or as way behind. And really what they need is to just move.
Paula, thank you so much. Great perspective to offer to the call-in show today. We really appreciate you giving us a call. Mariah, you want to comment on that?
Sure. I just wanted to comment. Thank you for pointing that out, Paula. You know, I am the mother of a 7.5-year-old, almost 8-year-old, and so I understand the need for that outlet. I think the thing I would like to add is that the critical nature of having that free time to be able to explore building relationships, team building. This is where children also learn teamwork and empathy and resiliency. They learn that from also engaging with their peers in creative ways without rigid boundaries and structures that we find in the classroom. And so I just wanted to also just echo the importance and the value, and that actually also manifests itself in the social, emotional, behavioral skills that we're hearing later on down the line that employers want to see from employees. They want people to know how to work in teams and to be cordial and polite and have good relationship skills and communication skills. This is where children learn them at a very early age, and that can be not just in the classroom but on the playground. It's very valuable.
Matt, you wanted to add something too?
Well, and you see that a lot of the policymakers, those so-called soft skills of being able to work in a group, I mean, I hear that all the time when I'm up at the Capitol talking to people. So that's a big thing. And a lot of what the callers are saying involves obviously more cost. And the question when we dug into the data that's reported at the Santa Fe Reporter, we found that, for example, if you look at Nevada, which is kind of held up as sort of the poster child sometimes for efficient reporting, they spend $70 a student. We spend $211 a student. That's per student per year. So it's a massive, massive difference. Can that pay for something like an educational assistant in the classroom? Can it pay for perhaps, more playground supervisors, something to get the kids outside? That's a big impact that kind of data reporting can make. And if they can figure out a way to make that more efficient, spend money maybe upfront on something like a software system that everyone across the state uses to get you, Mariah, the kind of uniform data and uniform measurements that is so valuable to you, and then Ian, kick it back out to the community during the school year. I mean, that I think is sort of the brass ring if they can work with that.
We have someone on the line as well who wants to ask a question about data analysis. Stephanie in Albuquerque, what's your question?
Hi, I'm at the University of New Mexico, and we've just been looking at the amount of data analytics that are available here at the university, as well as needs that are within the state. And so you're talking about a lot of data that is being collected and not being used. And so my question is, do you have the analytics resources available to you? Do you have the analysis that you need to be able to take care of that, or is it just not being done because of going to different departments and things like that? Is this a need that you could use?
I think a lot of the data that's being collected, it goes to the public education department, and oftentimes it gets passed along to the feds because they require reporting for various, Title I, things like that, individualized education plans. The question is how efficiently the state can manage that data and what the reporting of that data, I think, does to the local school districts, particularly in New Mexico. I mean, we have the behemoth, which is APS, and then some other large districts, like Cruces and Roswell and Rio Rancho and Santa Fe. But these small schools, you end up having people like the superintendent of Logan Schools, who happens to be a state representative. Those people are the data reporters. They just don't have the staff, and you lose that economy of scale. And, you know, $357,000 really slams a district like that, if that's the cost, the true cost of reporting.
Absolutely. One more caller I want to take this hour. Charles Bowyer is on the line. Charles is the executive director of the National Education Association of New Mexico. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Your organization represents public education employees in New Mexico. What's at stake for those folks as we talk about potential additional budget cuts for schools in New Mexico?
Well, what's at stake for them is having fewer colleagues on the job to help with the work, having fewer tools to work with, having a smaller team. Your guests today have been talking about the importance of having a well-rounded team to help students, educational assistants, social workers, others. And those are the jobs that are on the line with these cuts. As you probably know, the budget that passed out of the House last night is a sort of hold-the-line budget. It's a budget that doesn't do any improvement to school funding, but tries to hold school funding from any additional cuts. When we look at the cuts that schools suffered during the special session and the solvency legislation of this session, it's about $113 million out of an already strapped system. And so what we're seeing right now in this budget is a hold even budget that moves some money into the school equalization guarantee. That's money that goes directly to school districts to spend on educational programming in the district. But in reality, it doesn't increase school funding. It simply shifts some money from other areas so that we have more money, at least for school districts, to use to target in trying to advance instruction. Now, one of the things many of your guests talked about are things we ought to be talking about in a regular session of the legislature, policy changes that improve instruction, that improve student performance. But in reality, what we've been talking about in this session is survival.
Yeah. Charles, do you feel like this year really is different? Is there a way that we can get back to talking about how to prioritize spending and investing in programs that work?
We can, and I think what we have to do is know that a state budget like ours can't be cut to solvency. We have to use revenue enhancement as well. And that's the real difficulty. And when we have government that's split between two parties, we have one party in the governor's mansion saying no tax increases, and we have another party running the legislature, which says, you know, we can't continue to survive by simply cutting our way to success. We have to have some revenue enhancements. And I hope, as your callers call their legislators in the governor's office, that's the message they bring, is that we can't cut any more out of public schools or other vital public services. It's not just public schools. It's higher education. It's other vital public services that have been cut. And we can't do it anymore. We don't have any fat to cut. We've already cut the fat. We've already cut the muscle. Now we're down to the bone. And that's the message. We have to have revenue enhancements so that we can balance this budget with additional funding and not just cuts.
Charles, thanks so much for calling in today. Appreciate you offering your perspective to this conversation. Mariah, we're up on the end of the show here. There's so much more to talk about, but can you leave us with a final thought of what information you'd like lawmakers to consider from folks like yourself who are working on education, working on policy and research and data? What do you wish lawmakers would look at?
I think that there's a ton of data out there. There's a ton of research that's been conducted, and we know what works. I think they have a very hard task in front of them of being able to fund what we know works.
All right. Thanks so much. That's all the time we have today. Thank you for everyone who called in and shared your thoughts on education funding. The conversation doesn't have to end here. Find KUNM News on Twitter or go to the KUNM call-in show page at KUNM.org and share your comments there. We also posted links to the organizations and programs and articles mentioned today at KUNM.org. I'm Sarah Gustavus. I'm also the producer of New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS. Join us Friday night at 7 to hear more on this topic. Marino Spencer was our engineer. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls, and Anna Landy live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This show is part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project that looks at ethics, transparency, and good government. It's funded by the Thornburg Foundation and by contributions from KUNM listeners. Next Thursday morning at 8, we'll look at how the Trump administration's immigration crackdown is unfolding here in New Mexico. This is 89.9 KUNM.